Husbands and wives can be so different. Here's researcher Shanti Feldhahn with one example.
We think of physical intimacy in our marriages as being primarily a physical need for him. You know, it's a physical need, it's a physical urge, and if you've been chasing around kids all day, sleep seems like a physical need too, right?
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth, author of Adorned. For July 1st, 2021, I'm Dana Gresh. Your kindness not only improves your relationships, but it changes you in the process. This week, we've been listening to Nancy DeMoss Wolgemuth and Shanti Feldhahn. They're talking about the power of kindness. Now, if you missed any part of this conversation from earlier in the week, be sure to go back and listen on the Revive Our Hearts app, or you can find the audio and transcripts at reviveourhearts.com. Here's Nancy.
Well, I have loved this conversation with Shanti Feldhahn this week. And Shanti, thank you for taking time. I know you've got your parents coming in town for a visit, and Robert and I are on our way to a family event as well. But I'm so glad the Lord allowed our paths to intersect. You're Me actually too. Headed to Michigan. I came from Michigan, and we met here in Atlanta. And I want to thank our friends also at the Salem station here in Atlanta for making it possible for us to do this interview here. Thank you, Nick, for engineering. And it's great having a guy in while we're talking about this, so we can see where he's nodding. He's affirming and saying, you're right, girl. So that's meant a lot. Thank you so much. This has been really helpful to me. I'm really thinking hard about all this stuff. And I have an incredible husband whose picture should be on the front cover of this book, really, because he epitomizes this kindness stuff. And I can tell how it blesses me, but I want to learn how to bless him in greater ways and how to love him better. And all the things I've been telling women all these years, now I'm saying, oh, how do you actually do this? So thank you for being a coach. I think of you as you're a coach. You've studied and listened to other people telling their stories about kindness, and you're a researcher, and then you put it into this book. So we've gotten a lot of good coaching from you this week.
Thanks.
So the book is called The Kindness Challenge, 30 Days to Improve Any Relationship. Now, that's not saying that there will be no challenges with that relationship after 30 days, but we have both really seen the power of spirit-filled kindness to change a relationship. If nothing else, it changes the way we see that maybe hard person or that relationship we just want to improve. And so it's just chock full of practical, helpful, wise insights and examples of what this looks like. And I know our listeners have some questions as we've gone along. We've tried to answer some of those, but lots more that are in this book. It's available for any of our listeners who would want to make a donation to help support the ministry of Revive Our Hearts and to help women know better how to live out the Christ-filled life in their various relationships. So when you call to make a donation or you go online and do that, be sure and let us know that you want the kindness book. If you have to ask for Shanti Feldhahn, you might trip up on that name not be sure how to say or spell it. But ask for the kindness book, and our people taking your call will know that that's what you're looking for. We've talked about this challenge, which kind of grew out of the 30-day husband encouragement challenge that we give every chance we can on Revive Our Hearts. But I love how you have developed this. You've unpacked these different points. And again, just remind us, because I don't want anybody to forget. I want lots and lots of people. I want everyone listening to take the kindness challenge. So there are three parts to it that we've touched on. And just remind us what those are.
So what you do is you pick one person that you want a better relationship with. And it could be a spouse, a child, your difficult in-law, whoever that is. And for 30 days, you do three things, and your listeners will recognize two of them. One of them is, the first one is, you don't say anything negative about that person, either to them or about them to somebody else for that whole 30 days. Because that's often where we sabotage ourselves and our relationships, is when we speak about somebody else, like, oh, I'm so frustrated with so-and-so.
And that's what we tend to fixate on. And then that becomes all we can see. And we see that person through eyes of hurt or eyes of disapproval or criticism. And when we get rid of the negativity, we realize there really is more to that person than what I've
there's
been
so much more
focusing on.
And that is then what you do as a second thing every day for 30 days is what is that other, what is the positive stuff? And you look for, and then you find something you can sincerely praise, sincerely affirm about them. And you tell them what that is. And you tell somebody else.
And this is sincere. We're not talking about something manipulative
here. Yeah.
This is not to get something. This is to give, to be a, to represent the heart of Jesus to this person.
Even if you think it is so minor. Like I had one mom who had a difficult situation with her adopted son who was adopted out of a difficult, difficult foster situation. And he's just this little boy, has so much rage, and he's just always, so she's a trauma mom, right? And she's like, how am I going to find something to praise every day? You know, but she had committed, I'm doing the 30-day kindness challenge. I'm going to do this. And so literally it would be things like, okay, honey, thanks for sitting still at the dinner table. And that was her thing for the day. Mm-hmm. But then she would notice more the next time, you know, and she would notice, you know, thank you for the fact that your brother tried to provoke you and you didn't let him. Good job. Like she never would have even noticed that before if she hadn't been looking for the things to praise.
And so, we flower, we blossom, yes. We flourish under, we do ourselves.
I know, it shouldn't surprise us that others do too.
People do. You said it's like oxygen.
Yes,
totally. It breathes life into what can be a stale or a negative relationship.
Yeah. And so that's the first two things is not, don't say anything negative to or about them. Find the one thing you can praise every day to and about them. And then you do a little action for them, some small action of generosity or kindness each day, a little day-to-day stuff. It doesn't have to be big, but that's where we found that if you do those three things for 30 days, 89% of the relationships, and we did a big national study on this, 89% of the relationships improved. And it's because it's really changing you. It's
and the other 11% you just hadn't heard about yet.
Yes, exactly. That was just in the 30 days. Yeah, now right. I know some of the numbers would have changed if we had followed them for, you know, 120 days or whatever.
The point isn't to be kind for 30 days and then stop. The point is to develop a whole new way of seeing and looking and thinking and responding.
It's a new habit. We basically found, and here's the crucial thing that I can tell everybody. If there is somebody in your life that you want a better relationship with, even if like maybe you already have a good marriage, you just want to make it better. Not to mention if there's, you know, maybe a difficult situation. The first couple of days, you may think that you're going into this oh so benevolently, and you may think you're going into this, oh, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm, you know, this other person is very difficult, but I'm going to do this. You're going to spend the first two or three days going, oh my word, oh my word, oh my word. I had no idea how often I was unkind. It is a detox. That's a great word. Oh my goodness. I had no idea. And it's like, God is going to be opening your eyes, opening your eyes. I had no idea. So the first few days is just eye-opening.
Right.
And then the first couple of weeks, those first 2 weeks is like, okay, what is this? What does it look like? I thought I was a kind person already. And now I'm practicing this every day and I'm getting to be good at it in a whole different way. It's a boot camp for kindness. And then the next half of it, the last 2 weeks, now is when you're developing a habit. You're taking that new competence at kindness and you're screwing it down deep into your heart and into your actions and into your thoughts and your attitudes. And it becomes a habit. So a lot of people actually told us by the time day 30 happened, they'd kind of forgotten where they were. In the challenge, you know, a lot of people by that point, it was just now this was a life. This was a lifestyle.
Now, I know some of the women who've done the 30-day husband encouragement challenge have told us their husband at some point, you know, they don't tell him they're doing this. And he wonders, who is this woman? And what have you done with my wife? I mean, this can be a really whole new way of thinking. And I think at times it can feel a little awkward if you're not used to saying these kinds of words. But you know, there are simple ways to do that. One of the things Robert and I love doing is texting and to each other. It's not a substitute for kind words, but it's a way during the course of the day for us to check in with each other and to express kindness and just the little things. And you'd be amazed how impacting just a simple, I love you text, I'm thinking about you, thank you for doing this, I noticed when you did. It can be just a one-line, quick text, but it blesses that person. It blesses their day.
Yeah.
It encourages, it strengthens, it gives life. And even in those difficult relationships, it's going to change you and it's going to change them.
Well, here's really, when you think about a text message, a voicemail, an email, whatever it is for you, that truly, if that's in your relationship, a way that you communicate, absolutely use that as the vehicle for your words of praise that day. You know, don't think that it has to only be verbal. I mean, I've been doing this for my teenage daughter, right? And she is a great kid, but you know, she just turned 17 and she really has that eye roll thing down and it makes her mama's head explode. Let's just say it that way. And so there can be times that I just focus on a lot of the frustration and I don't notice the good. And during the 30-day kindness challenge for her, because that's who I was doing it for, I would notice, I'd be texting her about, you know, something, when are you going to get back from volleyball or, you know, something logistical.
Right.
And I started going, you know what, let me put this in the text so she will have it to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the first things that I did was I said, you know, honey, I have to tell you, when I saw you at that volleyball game yesterday and I saw how you guys were down by like 10 points and you rallied your team members, you knew you were probably going to lose, but you didn't let them get discouraged. You cheered them on. You kept going right until that last point, which they did lose. You kept going right until that last point. I am so proud of watching you as a leader. And I found out later, she showed that text message to somebody at her school.
Wow. It breathed life into her.
It breathed life in her. I had no idea that it was so. I was thinking, okay, to me, it's just like a little one-off, like a little comment. No, not minor to her.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You can't imagine the power of this. We said it had superpowers.
Yes.
Kindness.
Kindness is a superpower. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about this thing of acts of kindness.
Yeah.
Not just the words, but acts of generosity and kindness. What might that look like?
So it's interesting because when we think of that number three element of do a small act of generosity for them, our brains immediately go to the random acts of kindness, you know, movement. You know, you pay for the people behind you in the drive-through, you know, in the beat-up car. And all of that is wonderful, but it takes on a whole new meaning and raises your ability to be kind to a whole nother level when you're really focusing on that one person.
Right.
And you're trying to figure out what are the types of generosity that are going to matter to them. And frankly, it helps you figure out what are your strengths? Because, you know, here we are, we're beating everybody up and beating ourselves up. You know, we're more negative than we thought and we don't praise as often as we thought. But you know what? Maybe we don't do these actions as often as we should, but we do them. What are the things that come naturally to us to bless others? Or maybe don't come naturally, but you can develop a habit in and it's something you're good at. And I'll give you an example of the type of thing that you wouldn't even think of as an action of generosity, which is to be interested in the other person, to take an interest in what's going on in that other person's life. And instead of focusing on yourself in a conversation, focus on that other person in the conversation.
And you actually learned this as a young person after having some difficulties in your own childhood.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting to look back on this now because, you know, growing up, I was actually the kid nobody liked.
Shanti?
It's one of these things that, you know, so many of us go through these phases as a child, but that was my experience. I mean, truly, I didn't know how to make friends. I desperately wanted friends. I'm an extrovert. But we had some issues, you know, in our family. We'd gone through a tragedy, losing a very close family member. And I just didn't know how to handle life. It was just difficult growing up. And so I would like talk about myself, you know, and I was just shocked why that wouldn't make people like me. You know, I'm chattering about myself all day long. And I was so unhappy and sinking into a depression. And one day, I'm 12 years old, and I was at my grandparents' house for the summer, and my grandfather gives me this little book, and in the book, it's talking about, and it was this written to adults, it was sort of really a business book, honestly, and it was talking really about, you know, how is it you can make an impact on people, and what makes business deals work really well. But there was this principle in there that it said, you know, if you want someone to think that you are the best conversationalist ever, if you want someone to think you are an amazing person, don't talk about yourself. Ask them about them. Enter their life. Figure out what it is in their, you know, heart that they're thinking right now and dig into that. Ask them where they went on vacation. You know, for me as a 12-year-old, it was this eye-opening experience of, you mean, wait, if I ask somebody, what did you do over your summer break? They're going to think I'm a good conversationalist. They're going to want to talk to me because I'm focusing on them. And that principle is a simple principle of generosity. You're caring about the other person. That's the kind of thing that when I, for example, with my daughter, if I say, what did you do today? And I'm like halfway working on a deadline. I've got my phone in my hand and I'm not really paying attention. That doesn't do anything. But when I put everything down, ignore the distractions, and I turn to her and I say, so that situation with the friend that you told me about, what's going on? And what are you thinking about that? And trying to get into her heart, that's an act of generosity. It's an act of love, but it's an act of generosity.
And it tells her that she is more valuable to you than whatever else you were working on.
Yeah.
That you really do care.
Yeah.
That you want to be in her world.
It's an amazing tool, and you can think of it as something manipulative, or you can think of it truly as this is a tool God has given us to help others feel better about themselves.
You talk about some other types of gifts, ways that we can give something that is precious to us. This one you just referenced, really, giving of the time.
It's what are giving you your time. About? I'm laughing because for me, it usually involves sugar. I'm sorry. For me the other day, actually, I have to admit this out loud. This is horrible. But this is an example, again, of an action of generosity where my husband had made this most unbelievable cake for me for Mother's Day. It was actually
way
like
to go, Jeff.
Yeah, way to go, Jeff. It was actually tiramisu. Like he really did it up. Like he was really trying to figure this out. And you know, usually doesn't have time, but I was gone for Mother's Day weekend. It's very common for me to be speaking at some other church on Mother's Day. And so we did our Mother's Day, you know, the next day, and he unveiled this tiramisu, which was awesome. And I kind of wanted to keep it all for myself.
This is mine.
But I knew my daughter loved this. And so there was actually a conflict a couple days later when the tiramisu was running out. I mean, this sounds horrible, but it was actually an action of generosity to say to her, go ahead, you can have that. Go ahead, have that last piece, you know? And it sounds completely ridiculous that that should matter. But here's the thing that I noticed. As we go through these actions of generosity, you know what happens? We're speaking to the other person about their importance to us and how much we care about them. But the other thing we're doing is we're taking our grip off of the stuff that matters to us. And at the same time, we're really working on ourselves.
We're getting free.
We're getting free.
Now, in this same context, you talk about physical intimacy in marriage.
Yes.
And how that
I knew you were
can
bring
be
that up.
A gift. Well, I think it's so important. And I'm glad you brought it up in this book.
Well, here's the thing about this, and you know, for all of the women listening to this, if you are listening to this and you are a married woman, there is a higher than average chance that your husband has probably more of a desire for physical intimacy than you do on a day-to-day basis. And you know, that's not going to be everybody, but statistically, we've seen some couples are very evenly matched and some couples it's actually the wife who has that greater desire, but statistically, maybe about 7 out of 10, depending on which study you look at, the husband is the one. If that is the case for you, then think about this, that when you actually reach out towards him in that way, that is actually a really powerful action of generosity and kindness because it is caring about something that matters a lot to him. And I actually should explain to the women that this is actually, if you don't mind me diving over into the research about men for a minute, for women only, one of the things that we found is that we as women have this big misunderstanding about what physical intimacy means to our husbands. We think of physical intimacy in our marriages as being primarily a physical need for him. That's kind of the category mm-hmm. you mentally put it in. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a physical need. It's a physical urge. And if you've been chasing around kids all day, sleep seems like a physical need too, right? And instead, once I actually, you know, was asking the men, what's the importance of this in your life? What I heard from them had nothing to do with the physical. Nothing. Mm. What I heard was this enormous emotional need that they couldn't get met any other way. And it's the need that every man has to feel that his wife desires him. Mm-hmm. And that, it turns out, surprising to many of us as women, it gives our husbands a sense of confidence and a sense of well-being, really, but in all the other areas of their life. Mm-hmm. And conversely, and here's where it really becomes relevant to this, it works the other way as well. If he doesn't feel desired, if he feels like it's a little too easy for his wife to say, you know what, honey, I'm just really tired, it almost gives him this feeling like, I must be so undesirable, I can't even compete with her pillow. Like, that for a guy, that's really a depressing thought. And that gives them a feeling of a lack of confidence and a lack of well-being.
In other areas.
In other areas of his life. And so thinking about that, this is actually not a small thing at all. This is actually a pretty major type of generosity that for you as a wife to actually think about that, because that's what we found is the biggest holdup. There's certainly medical issues. There are all sorts of issues. You could be having a very difficult time in your marriage and that just is, you're like, okay, I need to take that off the table for a while. Absolutely. I understand that. But in most situations, it's mostly just because we're physiologically different. We just don't think about it the same way. And so start thinking about it and then act on it. That is a wonderful way of blessing your husband with this action of generosity.
I want to touch on one more area that you mentioned. And I think it's so important in relationships and for us as believers especially, but that is to assume the best. When we talk about practicing kindness, I don't know why it is that some of us sometimes are so prone to assume the worst. When you're talking about your mate or your child, this can be particularly, you know, damaging in the relationship. Why does that matter so much?
It's interesting. We actually found this starting in the research that we did. There was a research study we did a number of years ago on the happiest marriages. What is it that makes the happiest marriages? Yeah. And what are they doing different from everybody else, even people in good marriages? And this one thing that they chose to believe the best, even when they were legitimately hurt, that one thing we found was a prerequisite that you cannot have a happy marriage without it.
Wow.
It was the only one. There were 12 of these little habits we identified. It was the only one that was a prerequisite. And if you think about it, it makes sense. And it makes sense why this would be a very important action of kindness. Because all of us are gonna get hurt at times. The question is, what do you choose to believe about the other person's intentions towards you when that happens? Because the happiest marriages get hurt, the best parents and kid relationships get hurt. But what are you going to choose to believe about the other person's intentions? Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example of how this can work well and how this can fall apart. So I was at an event a little while ago, and it was a marriage conference. It was a Friday night. And a pretty big chunk of the day on Saturday that Jeff and I were speaking at. And independently, a husband comes up to us at one point and his wife came up to us at another point, you know, hours later, kind of on the down low, kind of off to the side. Can I talk to you over here in a corner? Kind of one of those. And the husband said, you know, nothing I do is good enough for her. She just doesn't care about me. It's just this and that and these problems and that, you know, she just doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The wife comes up to us hours later on the down low, off in a corner. You know, it's like he doesn't care about me. Like nothing works. And, you know, he could give a rip about what I want and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Both of them were basically saying the other person doesn't care.
Right.
And I looked at the two of them independent of each other and I see this person is spending the entire weekend with you at a marriage conference. What do you mean they don't care?
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the wife, she was the one who came up to me second. And so I had the benefit of having known that her husband had always already come up to me. And I didn't say that he had, but I said, you know, can I just tell you something? Your husband is spending all weekend in the fall on a Saturday afternoon when college football is on at a marriage conference with you.
He must care.
Why do you think he doesn't care? And here's really what we find. It is very easy to think to ourselves things like, this is natural. He knew how that would make me feel and he said it anyway. Okay, I'm hurt. And you think he knew it, he said it anyway. You're saying he doesn't care about me.
And you're assigning motive.
And instead, here's the power of this action of generosity. When your brain starts to think that, which it will, right? You're hurt. Everybody gets hurt. When your brain starts to think that, you go, no, absolutely not. I am not going to think about that because I know he cares about me. I know he loves me. And you think, what did he do? Okay, yesterday he did this. He took the kids out to get ice cream so I could have a few minutes alone. Or, you know, he did this or he did that. And you're remembering, it's like Psalm 103, forget not all his benefits, right? What did God do that makes me recognize that he loves me and that he's good despite all these things that are happening? I'm going to forget not all his benefits. And you go, I know my husband loves me. I know he cares about me. And so he must not have known how that thing would make me feel or he wouldn't have said it. And you turn it around and you think, what is the most generous explanation for this thing that hurt me? And you know what? Almost always, sadly, not always, but almost always, you will find it.
Most generous explanation for that action.
Yeah. What is the most generous explanation? And sometimes the most generous explanation for him and for us, by the way, is, you know what? Even the most amazing, godly Christian husband and wife can be a knucklehead sometimes, but that's all it is I'm being a knucklehead. Okay, tomorrow I'll feel better. I'll get a good night's sleep. I'll whatever. And you know what? We want them to be generous with us when we hurt them. So
we
let's
want
be
God
generous.
To be generous
yes,
with us.
Yes, we do. Very much.
And Jesus
so.
Addressed that very thing in the Sermon on the Mount in the version in Luke chapter 6, where he talks about doing good to those, not just those who love you, not just those who do good to you, but those who don't, those who are sinners. And he said, love your enemies, do good, lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the evil.
Well,
be merciful, even as your Father is merciful.
Well, let me tell you, this was a big eye-opening one for me. When I first looked at that verse in context of what I was seeing in the 30-Day Kindness Challenge research, and I realized that verse is the origin of the golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. We teach that to our kids. You know, everybody in the world knows that. We all think of it as this sweet sentiment. And we think, absolutely, that's important. Well, you know what? It is not a sweet sentiment. Because the situation that Jesus is talking about there, the context of that verse, is exactly these types of situations. Active injustice. Active cruelty, somebody being mean to you, for example, and the example he uses that somebody's stealing from you. Mm-hmm. And yet he says, look, if you're kind to the people who are kind to you, sorry, no brownie points for that.
Exactly.
Like you don't get credit. What I'm calling my people to do, I'm setting the bar much higher. I'm calling you to treat that person who's treating you very cruelly in the kind and generous and grace-filled way you wish they were treating you. And if that's what Jesus calls us to do for our actual enemies, you know what? We can believe the best of this spouse of ours or this child of ours or our father-in-law. Is it always going to be the case? No. But in the spouse situation, statistically, it was 99% of the cases.
Wow. Well, I know a lot of people listening to this conversation are going to want to get a hold of this book, and we'd love to send it as our way of saying thank you for anyone who makes a donation of any amount to the ministry of Revive Our Hearts. And I'm sitting here, Shanti, listening to you, thinking of how many people are stuck in some relationship that just seems they're at an impasse. It seems like it can't improve. It can't get better. And they've tried and tried and tried and nothing's happening. Nothing's changing. And maybe mentally they've just checked out. Yeah. Said, I'm tired of doing this. I'm tired of being the one to do the giving. Well, I want to just say, I believe God could get you unstuck.
Yeah.
And the kindness challenge may be exactly what you need to help with that. What can you lose? You become more like Jesus. You show his love.
That's a great point.
To others. And what if we Christians really were to be the kindest people on the face of the earth? You think, you know, all our apologetics, all our trying to prove the gospel to people, all our shouting or ranting or whatever we do to make ourselves heard, that's not having so much impact. What if we really were the kind people and they could see your marriage and mine and your children and how you treat them and you in the workplace and me in our office and could see us being merciful as our Father in heaven is merciful? That's going to make people stop and go, wow.
Wow.
There's something powerful there.
That is the vision that Jesus casts for us. Thanks for putting it that way, seriously, because I need that. I need to have that challenge set before me of imagine what would happen to the world if we all looked like this.
That's Shanti Feldhahn talking with Nancy DeMoss Wahlgemuth about Shanti's book, The Kindness Challenge. Are you ready to put your kindness into action? As part of our emphasis on kindness during the month of July, we're going to be doing the 30-day kindness challenge all month long. Each weekday this month, our team will broadcast live on social media at 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll share a short devotional on kindness. It starts today, so be sure to follow us on our Facebook page or subscribe to Revive Our Hearts on YouTube. You don't want to miss a single day of this kindness challenge. Tomorrow, we'll keep learning about kindness as Nancy teaches us from the book of Titus. Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Wahlgemuth wants to help your words be full of kindness. It's an outreach of Life Action Ministries.